So the goal of this shiur is to begin to understand some of the insights of our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, to Parshas Chayisara. And I have in front of me a number of Sfarim. Besides a Chumash, I have a Sefer called Nefesh HaRav, another Sefer called Divrei HaRav, and a third called Mipnini HaRav. All of those were authored by Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita, in which he has at the end of each of those volumes what's called Likutim Ala Parshios, and he gathers together different insights of Rav Soloveitchik on the Parsha. I also have in front of me, this is the original copy of what's called Shiurei HaRav, a conspectus of the public lectures of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Since then it's been printed in many different forms. This is the original. I have another sefer called Yimei HaZikaron here. And finally I have a collection of the Rav's essays in tradition. And this is spring 1978. I have some other notes which I just simply can't find, so I don't know where they are. That would have added another element, but by the time we get to that element, we're probably running out of time anyway. So let me just say Shalom Aleichem to David and to Joe. And
how is the rough today?
Yeah, you know, it's been very rough. You know, I'm when we finish, I'm going to make at least one shiva call. I mean, they're all here on one street. So we're going to start with the Chumash, and we're going to look at the Parsha, and we're going to ask a number of questions on the Parsha. And most of our study will focus on four psukim at the end of the first perek of Parshas Chayisara, which is Perek Chav Gimel. And if we start with Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayokom Stei Ephron, this is after the purchase of the Ma'ara. Vayokom stay Ephron asher b'machpela asher lifnei mamre hasod v'ma'or asher bo v'chol eitz asher basode asher b'chol gvulo soviv li'avram l'mikno li'eni b'nei ches. Now if you take Pasuk Yud Zayin and you compare it to Pasuk Chaf, which is the last Pasuk in the Perek, it's almost a repeat verbatim. Vayokom asode Vama'or asher bo li'avram lachuzas kaver me'eis b'nei ches. So the first question that we want to ask is, what's the chiddush in Pasuk Chaf that's adding anything whatsoever to Pasuk Yud Zayin? What happens between Pasuk Yud Zayin and Pasuk Chaf in Pasuk Yud Tes is v'achrechein kaver Avram esara ishto, is the burial of Sarah el ma'or asdeya machpelah. So let's ask another couple of questions. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Torah mentions that the Stei Ephron Vayokom. Chazal say Tkuma Haisalo. We'll try to figure out what that means. And then in the following Pasuk it says Li'enei B'nei Ches, in the eyes, in front of the eyes of Bnei Ches. Compare that to Pasuk Chaf, where Perek Chaf Gimel ends with the three words Mei Eis Bnei Ches. So there seems to be a difference here between Li'ene Bnei Ches and Mei Eis Bnei Ches. We'll try to understand the difference. Also emphasized at the end of Pasuk Yud Tes, it says Be'eretz Knan. And there's a certain emphasis here on Eretz Canaan. This is the land that was promised Avraham Avinu. Of course, we have some general questions here on the parasha, and we'll get to some of those a little bit later on, B'li Neder, but let's focus on these questions. Now, the main theme of Parshas Chayisara, at least in terms of space, is not the burial of Sarah and the purchase of Maras HaMachpelah, but rather the Shidduch with Rivka. And there's a very interesting pasuk here, which called to the Rav's attention because of the Gemara in Brachos. And the pasuk says, "Vatomer shesei Adoni." Rivka turns to Eliezer and she says, "Please drink." And then Vatecha Lashkoso, after she finishes giving Eliezer to drink, Vatomar Gam Ligmalech Eshav. So she feeds Eliezer, she gives him drink, and then finally she gives drink to the camels. And that sequence, which to you and I might seem natural, how could it be otherwise? But it bothered the Rav's mind, based on a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says that a person should not eat until he feeds his animal first. Asur liadam sheyochal kodem sheyitein machal abemto. And the Gemara actually bases this on a pasuk that's very familiar to us. V'nasati esev b'sodcha levemtecha. And then afterwards it says v'yachalta. V'yachalta v'savata. Now the Magen Avraham in Siman Kuf Samach Zayin makes a distinction between Achila and Shasiya. The derivation in the Gemara in Brachos is limited to Achila and doesn't apply to Shasiya. That's the Chiddush of the Magen Avraham. Therefore, Rivka was justified in giving drink to Eliezer before the camels. But the Rav Zichron of Bracha saw a Gemara at the end of Kiddushin, and he thought he came up with another answer that might even be more fascinating than that of the Magen Avraham. The Mishnah says, at the end of Kiddushin, in the name of Rav Shim ben Elazar, Ra'isa miyamecha chaya v'yov, sheyesh lehem umnus, ve'misparnasim shelo b'tzar. Why is it, says Rav Shim, that we human beings have to work so hard to find a parnasa, and the animals get it gratis? They don't really work very hard. Did you ever see a bird or an animal that had to take on a profession and had to work from 9 to 5, 9 to 10, in order to support its family? Hallo, lo nivru el shamsheni, vaniv nivresi l'shamesh eskoni, eno din shes parnes below tsar. You created me, God, in order that I should serve you. Doesn't it make sense that certainly I should be supported without any tsar? Ella, but the answer is, Heriosi Masai Vekipachti as Parnasosi. The reason I have to work so hard for my Parnasa with such anguish and tension and tsar is because I violated your will, God. I sinned. And therefore, Harry Osi Masai, I have to work very hard for my parnasa. It comes out, says the Rav, that if you isolate for a minute the moment of sin, and you go back to the Ikar Adin, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would provide for man without any work, without any toil, without any anguish. And the Rav assumed that the reason for that is because God has a chiyuv, He has an obligation, kaviyachol, to support all His creatures. He created them, and therefore He has to guarantee that they have parnasa. As the Gemara says, man di yoev chai, yoev mizoni. You gave us chayim, you give us mizonos. The only problem is that man sins. The animals don't sin. There's no sin by animals. And therefore, the animals get mizonos mi'ikar adin because God created them, and man di'ov chai yo'ev mizoni. But man lost his right to get parnasa because he sinned. And now we begin to understand, why is one prohibited to eat before he feeds his animals? The animals deserve to be fed mi'ikar adin. They have a right to claim, God, we deserve to be sustained. And in this case, man plays that role of the conduit to sustain the animals. There's no element here of tzedakah or chesed. But when it comes to a human being, he really doesn't have a demand and a right for food, for sustenance, because ain't tzadik baretz asher yaseh tov lo yechta, man sins, and therefore he forfeits his right. He can only have a chesed ask for chesed, you ask for a handout. It's like the halacha says in Shulchan Aruch that let's say you have a limited amount of funds and you borrowed money and you owe it back. You have no right to take those funds and give it to tzedakah just because a poor person knocked on your door. Because that's already chesed. But first, Meikar Adin, this Baal Chov, he comes along and he has rights to get his money back. And this, says the Rav, is the reason why we have to give the animals first. However, Rivka decides to give to Eliezer first before feeding the camels. And the reason for that is that Rivka doesn't have a right to say, Eliezer, you're a sinner. A person has to say about themselves, I look in, you know, introspectively and I say, I sinned. And therefore I need chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to deserve my sustenance. But in the case of someone else, do I have the right to say that he's a sinner? That's not the way to do it. I have to assume that every human being has a right to sustenance. He's not a chote. I have to be danim l'kav schus. I have to judge him favorably. He's not a sinner, and therefore he has rights to eat medina. And the Mela, if he has rights to eat Mikra Adin, we go back to the Kalvachomer of Reb Shimon. Man is greater than the animals because he was created L'sham Sheni to serve Hashem. And therefore he has first dibs to get fed first. So if it's a question of my eating myself, I have to give preference to my animals. But if it's a question of whether I should give you as a human being to eat, or first I should feed your animals, I have to feed you first. I don't have a right to say you're a chote, I'm dan yulikavschus, you have rights to food and to sustenance me ikra din, you're meshamish eskono, and therefore you deserve to eat first.
I'm sorry, who says this everybody agrees it's because man sins? Everyone agrees to that, but that's the reason?
That's the Mishnah. I don't know that anyone disagrees with that Mishnah. In fact, Adam HaRishon, Kodem L'Chait, had all the sustenance in the world. Poseach Yodecha, Umazbiel L'Chol Chai Ratzon.
So he was thrown out of Gan Eden, but the animals were out of Gan Eden in the first place. So
Adam HaRishon forfeits his right to food because he sinned. And Bezeh Sapecha Tochal Lechem. But the animals, they didn't sin. So they really have that natural, innate right, which is built into nature, of Hashem is Poseach Yodecha, you created us, and you therefore sustain us. David?
According to the Ramban, which says that they always didn't keep the Torah Chutzar, you could say Rifkin didn't either, so it's not really Kashin.
Maybe you're right. Maybe Rivka is in Chutz Laretz and she wasn't obligated to observe the halacha. Right, no, but the Magen Avraham took this very seriously. He was forced against the wall in a distinction between Achila and Shasiya. The Rav says that the distinction is not between Achila and Shasiya fundamentally, it's between whether I'm eating myself or feeding my animals, or whether I'm feeding you or feeding your animals.
It's not 100% the case. You always have to feed animals first. There's certain exceptions to the rule, like you're starving. No, something about if it comes to like a Michael Benayado versus a Michael Behem, there's a difference apparently. Everywhere I read this,
yeah.
A long time ago.
Well, here we're talking about water, so I guess it's equal. By the way, the Rav once told us that Reb Chaim Brisker's grandfather used to feed a cat every morning, and he wouldn't eat before he fed the cat. And there was one occasion which he couldn't find the cat. He didn't eat for hours until he found the cat. He took the halacha very seriously. But in any event, the yesod here I think is very important. Masbi al-chol chai ratzon means, God, you created man biratzon, that was your will, and therefore you have an obligation to be mefarnes according to the strict din. But it's only after the chait, kotz v'dardatz hasmiach v'zeh sapecha, then man loses his rights, mikra adin to parnasa, and he'll only get parnasa b'chesed. In fact, that's what Birkas HaMazon is all about. When we recite Birkas HaMazon and we express our gratitude to Hashem, the reason for that is because God did a tremendous chesed with us. We are sinners, and if we don't deserve to be sustained by Hashem, if it was Parnasa, Mi'ikar Adin, then if you are obligated to sustain me, I don't owe you a bit of gratitude. Yeah, it's like the guy who, the Gemara says, he threw him down into the bar and then he took him up from the bar. The guy who he threw down to the bar owes him no debt of gratitude for bringing him up from the bar. You created me, I have rights to eat, and you sustain me. So what's Birkas HaMazon? The entire institution of Birkas HaMazon is predicated on the idea that man deserves food only by chesed because he has sinned. When we recite Birchas HaGomel, we say HaGomel L'Chayavim Tovos Shegmalati Kol Tuv. When we say L'Chayavim Tovos, what we're saying is that we confess and we admit that as a result of our sin, we don't deserve this salvation. You saved us. The answer is that you saved us b'chesed. And if you extended such a great chesed to us, then we owe you a debt of gratitude, and we're going to acknowledge that gratitude by reciting the bracha of HaGomel. It's interesting that, let's say my wife had a dangerous experience and she was saved. The halacha is that she has to recite Gomel. I don't recite Gomel on her behalf. And the reason for that is because I don't have a right to say that what God did for my wife was b'chesed, meaning she didn't deserve to be saved. It was pure compassion. She has the right to say that. And she has the obligation to confess that it's only b'chesed that she was saved. But I can't do that on her behalf, just like I can't say to Eliezer, you don't deserve to eat because you're a chote.
How does it work with a woman? I was going to say, where is he going to be?
She should get together a minyan and recite a gomel. In fact, after birth, what we usually do is at the bris, if it's a boy or if it's at a kiddush in the case of a girl, we gather together the people and she recites a gomel. At least that's what I'm familiar with. I can't testify what goes on in your part of the world. I don't know. I just don't remember. I'm sure in the 2 years I must have heard it, but I simply don't recall.
Okay.
Rashi in Perchav Dalid, Pasuk Mem Beis, is famous for quoting the Chazal, Yofesi Chasan Shal Avdei Ha'avos Lifnei Amokom Mitorosam Shal Banim. We have so much to learn from the Sicha of the Avadim of the Avdei Avos. And if we look into the Parsha, we can learn a great deal. And the same is true with regard to the beginning of Parshas Chayisara, the Kvura, the burial of Sarah. There's so much to learn. The Ramban, in fact, writes that this whole Parsha was recorded in order to notify us about Chazdei Hashem im Avram. That Avram Avinu was the Nesi Elokim Ba'aretz. And I'm quoting the Ramban, he says, Asher Bola Gursham V'chol Ha'am Ayu Korin Lo Adot. Right, Noi, you know, they called him our master. And even during his lifetime, Avram was able to see the realization of Hashem's bracha, V'agadlo Shmecha, I will raise and glorify your name, V'heye bracha, meaning that people will bestow blessings on you because they respect you, they look up to you, they consider you a Nasi Elokim B'tochenu, they call you our master. And then Avram Avinu's wife dies, and she has to be buried. And this is a great challenge to Avram Avinu, because all of a sudden, he's got to run around and look for a burial place. He has to buy the Ma'ara. And that was an Nisayon. This was a challenge to Avram, because on the one hand, Hashem says, you're going to be considered so great, and on the other hand, where does he find a burial place for his wife? Okay, let's get back to the questions that we asked at the beginning of our discussion. And again, I ask you to open up those two psukim in Perek Chaf Gimel, psukim Yud Zayin and Chaf. And what's the difference between them? And Rav Soloveitchik suggested a very new idea. And he said the following, that what happens in Pasuk Chaf is that the Kever in Maris HaMachpelah all of a sudden gets a new name. A name that doesn't appear earlier in the parsha. That is Achuzas Kever. And in fact, there's a whole sugi in the Gemara in which the Gemara makes a distinction between two types of ownership of land in Eretz Yisrael. This is in the Mishnayos in Masech Erchin. There's something called a stay mikneh, and there's something called a stay achuza. For example, the halacha is that if you own a stay achuza, you're not allowed to sell it. In the same way that an Eved Ivri is not allowed to sell himself, a Jew is not allowed to sell himself as an Eved, so too you're not allowed to sell your stay achuza, even if you're in dire straits. In fact, in Melachim Aleph, there's an entire chapter, one of the most horrific chapters in Tanakh, about Navos HaYisraeli, who owned a field, who was an achuzas kover, and Achav tried to force him to give up that beautiful field and sell it to him. And Navos refused to do so because he didn't want to sell a stay achuza. So to here, what we have is in Pasuk Yud Zayin and Pasuk Yud Ches, we have a sodeh, a stay mikneh, and you look in Pasuk Yud Ches, it says lemikneh, but there's no mention of achuzas kover. When does it become an achuzas kover? That's only in Pasuk Chaf. What happened in the middle? From an astay mikneh to an achuzas kover, what's in the middle? The achrechein kover Avram es Sara ishto, the kfura of Sarah. The kfura of Sarah represents a transition point. It's no longer astay mikneh, it now becomes astay achuza. It now becomes priceless. And just as Navos HaYisraeli says in Melachim Aleph, Chalilili me'Hashem, mi'seisi es nachlas avosai l'cha, he doesn't want to part with his te'achuza. Avram Avinu, after he buries Sarah, the Sadek becomes a te'achuza. That's how the Rav is interpreting the words achuzas kover in Pasuk Chaf. And based on this, he wants to answer the other question, what's the difference between Li'enei B'nei Ches, which is in Pasuk Yud Ches, and Me'eis B'nei Ches in Pasuk Chaf? He says that in terms of a stay makne, so he buys a sadeh in the presence of the B'nei Ches. But that's not sufficient in the case of a stay achuza. Stay achuza, the Torah goes ahead and goes further and says, Me'eis B'nei Ches. What's the difference between the two? He says Avram Avinu understood after he buried Sarah that this was not just a purchase of a plot of land and a piece of real estate, but rather that he would never leave this ownership of this plot of land would never be cut off, would never be separated from him. He would always continue to possess it. It's a stay achuza. And we find something very similar in Nehemiah in Perek Beis, where once you bury a parent in a place, it becomes a stay achuza. There's a tremendously profound and strong kesher, a connection between the place itself and the one who owns it, or in this case, the place itself and all of Klal Yisrael, because Avram Avinu, by burying Sarah there, is making an achuzas kover for all of Klal Yisrael. Therefore, me'eis b'nei ches. Me'eis b'nei ches means it's taken away from b'nei ches. Legamre, it's totally removed from their possession. And therefore, the pasuk says in Yutes, v'achrechein kover Avram is Sarah ishto, and it says, b'eretz k'nan. Why the emphasis on Eretz Canaan? And the answer is that the Ramban says that Eretz Canaan always means that land that is designated specifically for the Jewish people. And this kinyan, this acquisition and burial, is the beginning of the fulfillment of the promise of Hashem to Avraham Avinu of Eretz Canaan. This is Haskolas Kiyum Havtachoso, to give Avram Avinu Eretz Nachla. And therefore, we're talking about a whole new experience. We should not believe for one moment that Perek that Pasuk Chaf is a repeat performance of Pasuk Yud Zayin. It's not. We're talking about a special place. Once the Kfuru was completed, it's an Achuzas Kaver. And that's why the Ramban says that the reason for this whole Parsha is that the Torah wants to teach us where the Avos are buried. And Anachnu Chayovim, says the Ramban, Lechaved Mokom Kfuras Avoseinu HaKadoshim, we owe a certain sanctity, a certain awe relationship to the place where our Avos are buried. And the Rav once told us that if you look at the Igeres Ramban, he writes that he's traveling to Hebron and he wants to dig a kever there. And the Rav heard from his father, the name Reb Chaim, that the Ramban is buried in that kever, in Hebron. So we talk about the Avos being buried in Hebron, the Imos. Now we can talk about the Ramban being buried in Hebron. Exactly where he's buried, we don't know. But it must be very close to the Maris HaMachpelah. Let's open up to Perek Chaf Dalid at the very end of Parshas Chayisara, Pasuk Samach Zayin, after the Shidduch is complete, and Eliezer brings back Rivka to Yitzchak. The Pasuk says, Vayinochem Yitzchak Acharei Imo. And Yitzchak is now consoled with the loss of his mother. And the Ramban writes that this pasuk is a remez that Yitzchak suffered greatly. He grieved in a very profound way over the loss of his mother. And he had no menachem, no one could console Yitzchak, until finally he married Rivka. And the Rav says he doesn't understand. If Yitzchak was so upset, he was so grieving and mourning over the loss of his mother, why is it that we don't find his name mentioned at all in Perek Chaf Gimel, in the perek that's dedicated to the death of Sarah and her burial? Why does the Torah say that Avram came Livkosa, Sarah Livkosa? What about Yitzchak? Where was he? And you may find many answers to this question, but the Rav, as a halachist, put on his thinking cap and he came up with the following answer. Baal Chayav B'Kfuras Ishto. There's a separate halacha, we'll see it in Rabbeinu Tam, in Tosfos, that amongst all the relatives, when a woman dies, it's the husband who has the primary obligation to bury his wife. And Tosfos records a maisa that happened, that Rabbeinu Tam lost his daughter, Rabbeinu Tam lost his sister, and nevertheless, he wasn't involved in the burial because his brother-in-law was involved in the burial. The pasuk says in Vayechi, Vani bevoi bepadan Aram, Mesa Eli Rachel. And Chazal say on that pasuk, Ein Isha Mesa El Labaila. Says the Rav, what does it mean, Ein Isha Mesa El Labaila? That the mitzvah of Avelus primarily is incumbent upon the Baal more than any other relative. And the Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchas Avel in Perek Beis, he says, Kama chamura mitzvah avelus, I'm going to prove to you, demonstrate how severe and how important is the mitzvah avelus, sharei nidches lo tuma mipnei krovav, kidei sheyisasek imayim v'yisabal aleihem. It means that a Kohen, for one of his close relatives, is going to violate his kedushas kahuna and be metami himself to bury the dead. But it's quite clear that the Rambam is identifying burial and avelus. They're all part and parcel of one mitzvah. And therefore, in the case of a woman who died, her husband has the primary chiyuv of avelus. He, more than any other relative, Ein Isha Mesa Labaila, is obligated in avelus, and therefore he's obligated in kfuras Ishto, to bury his wife. And the Torah went out of its way to leave out Yitzchak here, to indicate that the mitzvah of Kvura was incumbent on Avram Avinu. True, the halacha would be, if this is just my own addition to what the Rav said, if, let's say, the husband, for whatever reason, doesn't bury his wife, then that chiyuv falls by default on the rest of the family. But right now, Avram Avinu is capable of burying his wife, And therefore, the Torah says that he's involved. As far as the mourning and the grief is concerned, Yitzchak suffered tremendously as a result of the loss of his mother. And now, if we take a look at Avram's response at the beginning of Chayi Sarah, it says, "Vatoma Sarah b'kiryas Arba, etc. Vayov Avram lispod lisarah v'livkosa." First lispod, and then livkosa. And Rav Soloveitchik was very upset about this. He says, "I don't get it. Bechi is an emotional response, and that's spontaneous. Hesped requires a great deal of intellectual thought." When you have to evaluate the loss, first comes Bechi and then comes Hesped. And that's the way the human being is. Why is it then that with regard to Avraham Avinu, we find Lispod Lissara Velivkosa? And to answer this question, the Rav says something very radical. And that is that the reason why Bechi could come before Hesped is because Bechi represents the most intense response to the death of a family member. That's Bechi. And that's why the Gemara says, Givul Yomim LeBechi and Shiva Yomim LeHesped. So Bechi is a period of time immediately after the death in which one is overwhelmed by emotion. But that passes. And Bechi dissipates. That's the nature of man, and it's replaced by hesped, which means the ability of a person to use his calm and calculated intellect to evaluate a person. Avraham Avinu is something different. Bechi for Avraham Avinu is not something that comes and goes with regard to the loss of his wife, Sarah. And the Rav develops this idea by noticing that despite the fact that Avraham Avinu outlives his wife Sarah as an almon for 38 years, says the Rav, we don't find any major issue in Avraham Avinu's life. He doesn't play any major role. All the nisyonos of Avraham, the last of which was the burial of Sarah, following the death of Sarah, we don't find Avraham being challenged by any nisayon. The only episodes we find in the life of Avraham post Sarah's death are, number one, the burial of Sarah. And later on, we're going to find that Avraham Avinu is involved with the Bnei Keturah. The Torah reveals that he had children, but he doesn't play any major role. Let me just read to you the language. He says, Li'achar sheniftara ishto, he was so connected to his wife. Lo matzino od nisyonos b'tor v'sipuyim haruyim limasa l'doros. And why is that? Because Avraham Avinu and Sarah worked together. Hanefesh asher asu, in the plural, b'charan Avraham megayers hanoshim v'sarah megayers hanoshim. With the death of Sarah, what we find is that Avraham Avinu is a half a person. Vayochel chatzi b'sarah. It's as if half of him, of his very essence, is gone, is taken down with the death of his wife. And here the Rav quotes the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, what does it mean when it says livkosa? It should have said, according to Digduk, livkos aleha. Livkosa, says the Ibn Ezra, means ki'ilu Bechia hu poel yotze, ki hu sara haisa mekabelas es hapu'ula. It doesn't make any sense, says the Ibn Ezra. Livkosa means something that you do actively to someone else. But what does that mean, that Sarah receives some action here? That's impossible, she's already gone. Says the Ibn Ezra, ba lirmos al dveikus haboche imisha boche olav kilu hayuguf echad. The Bechia here, livkosa, introduces Sarah into the picture, because Avram and Sarah, it's such a dveikus, the boche here, Avram Avinu, who's crying, who's wailing and lamenting the loss of his wife, it's as if he's wailing over himself. He lost himself. She's guf echad. And we'll see this later on with regard to Yaakov and Yosef, The pasuk says, "Vayef oso aviv." When Yaakov thought that Yosef was dead, "Vayef oso." Oso means the same idea. Not just that he cried about Yosef; he was crying about himself because, with the death of Yosef, Yaakov felt his life was completely over. Is therefore lispod lisar livkosa. Hespe took place and terminated. But Bechia never terminated. For Avram Avinu, it was incessant, it was continuous. There was no end to his Bechi until the rest of his life. He cried over Sarah. Just like it says by Yaakov Avinu, Ki Eired El Bini of El Sha'ola, Yaakov says, there will be no consolation. So too, in the case of Avram, he buried himself with the burial of Sarah. He buried part of his own essence. He would never cease crying over her. He would never be consoled over her. And therefore the Torah says, Lispod Lisara Ulivkosa, way after the Hesped, he continued non-stop to cry over the loss of her and basically over himself.
I love reading it.
Say it once more, Joe. I'm sorry. Is that halachically acceptable? I don't know. I could just tell you that I believe, and I'm afraid to say this, but it's true. That's why I'm going to say it. That the Rav is talking about himself here. The Rav never got over the loss of his wife. My friend told me that he came to see the Rav once in Boston, and the Rav had a letter on the table that was 25 years old. It was a letter that he received from his wife. Every Friday he went to the kever to visit his wife. Am I going to tell you that that's halachically justified? I don't know. Reb Chaim was not excited about going to a cemetery, only when he had to go. But the Rav's case, it was different. And I think when he says this vart about Livkosa, he's talking about himself. And the truth is, you know, yesterday I went to Levaya. Tuesday I went to Levaya of a chavrus of mine who was killed brutally. And I have to tell you that the whole time I was listening to Hespedim in the Levaya, I thought one thought. There's life before this day and there's life after this day. I really feel that like it's a new world for me without Rav Moshe Chwersky after this terrible tragedy. And then when I came back from the Levaya and I started hearing the names of some of the others who were killed, three other men, and it turns out between me and my wife, we knew all three of them. One of them actually hosted my son and daughter-in-law for a Sheva Brachos. I mean, it's all one community here. It's one of them is, I remember him dancing at a wedding. There's some stories I could tell you, but it's not for now. The pasuk says, "Vayokom Avram me'al pnei mesa." We're going back to the beginning of the parsha, and this is pasuk gimel. What does it mean, "Vayokom Avram me'al pnei mesa"? You could read this a thousand times, but not hear the hedim, you know, the echoes that the Rav hears when he hears this pasuk. "Vayokom Avram me'al pnei mesa." Kima, just like the pasuk says, "Vayokom asod tkuma haisalo," so to Avram needed a tkuma. A tkuma means an extra measure of energy. When a person loses a close one, and how much more so in the case of Avram losing his wife Sarah, he's completely depressed, he's passive, he's lying down on the floor. That's how we identify an onen. And Avram Avinu, because in the midst of kvura, he had to get the stay Machpelah to bury his wife, is vayakam Avram el pnei meso. He had to energize himself, literally pull himself up after the tragedy. And this we know, that after a period of avelus, it's very difficult for a person to get back on his feet and to stand on solid ground. And that's what Avram had to do in order to be mekayim this great mitzvah of kvura. He had to put in the energy of vayokam Avram el pnei meso. But the Rav has something else to say. And he says, "Vayokam Avram hit azer b'gvura v'sgaber." He girded himself with the gvura, with the power and the courage and the energy. Levakesh mehem dvar chidush. He needed an extra energy, says the Rav, because what he was asking them for was something very new and very revolutionary. There were burial plots. There were cemeteries. That wasn't the chidush. And in the eyes of the Bnei Ches, Avraham Avinu, as a ger v'toshav, should have asked for a plot of land, you know, a plot of a small burial plot in the cemetery. But that's not something that Avraham Avinu would tolerate. Avraham Avinu understood that he is not part of Bnei Ches. He needs a special kvura. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Klal Yisrael. That's called Havdolah. And we say in Birchas Havdolah, Mavdil ben Kodesh Lechol ben Yisrael o Amin. We are a different people. Am Levadad Yishkon. We are separate and lonely from all the other nations. And Kedusha Shabbos means that Shabbos is different than all the other days of the week. And therefore, Avraham Avinu was asking for something called Kever Yisrael. He was instituting a brand new entity called Kever Yisrael. And therefore, he had to be Vayakam, to be Mizgaber, to tell them, listen, I'm going to fight for this. This is very important to me. Even if I have to get up and argue with the entire city to set up a mechitza between me and you. And I will bow down to you and I'll show you that I recognize and I have gratitude towards you and everything else, I'll think. And you'll offer me the Mivchak Kfarenu, I'm going to reject all that. I'm going to tell you something new. The Jewish people are a separate nation and we will be buried in our own cemetery. And before I continue, I want to show you something from the Nefesh HaRav here in Parshas Chayisara. He writes, Yesh chova lichvar mesa Yisrael bekevri Yisrael b'fnei atzmo v'isur gomor lekovram bekevri anachrim. It's an absolute severe violation to bury a Jew in a non-Jewish cemetery. And he says this din is not only l'chatchila, but if b'dieva they buried a Jew in a non-Jewish cemetery, you have to inter the dead and bury him elsewhere in a Jewish cemetery. That's an absolute chiyuv. And then he says that Reb Chaim Paskin, that if there's no one else to guarantee that this Jew be buried in a Jewish cemetery, then it has the halach of a mes mitzvah, and even if there's no one but a Kohen available to do this mitzvah, the Kohen can be metame himself in order to guarantee that a Jew be buried in Kever Yisrael. Or not. And this chiddush of Kever Yisrael is right here in this pasuk, Vayokom Avram Me'al Pnei Mesa. Avram Avinu Ba Achshav Lahafer Es Minag HaKadum. He is now undermining the old minag that everyone is buried in the same cemetery and no peoples have their own cemetery, and therefore Hu Mevakesh Liknos Achuzas Kever. He wants to buy an Achuzas Kever. Ach di Enoch Inami. Yeah, kever kan betocha ir mikomakom yeah bado steachuza. He means to say that I will have a connection and my descendants will have a connection to this Mara Samachpela that is so strong, it is irreversible, it is eternal. This was the chiddush of Avram. And I heard from the Rav, it's not here, and I'm surprised that Rav Shechter didn't add it here, that when Edmund D. Rothschild passed away, and De Gaulle was, I think, the president of France at that time, and he was Mohammed Rothschild very much. He was amazed that the family refused to bury Rothschild in the French cemetery. They insisted on taking him to the Jewish cemetery. And De Gaulle said, I don't understand. He was a Frenchman. Why shouldn't he be buried with us Frenchmen? But you can't explain that to a guy. Because this touches on the whole Avdolah of Kever Yisrael, Shebachar Banu Vivdilanim and Amim. But this is so essential to us, the concept of Kever Yisrael, and the source is right here in the parish of Avram and the Steya Machpelah. And if we have time for just one more point, I want to understand why is it that Avram Avinu insists on paying Kesef and buying the Sada? Nasati Kesef HaSodeh Kach Mimeni in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ephron wanted to give it to him as a gift. Avram refuses. We find something similar in Lech Lecha, Vayomer Melech Sdom El Avram, Tnuli HaNefesh Aruchush Kashkloch, and Avram says, I don't want anything for you, Michut V'Atzof Nal. Why is it? Sonei Matonis Yichyeh. Why is it that we hate getting gifts? And there are many answers to this question, but the Rav has his own approach. The Rav wants to suggest, based on a sugya in Masechta Kiddushin, it's also in Bava Basra, that in the case of a matana, you need a special das makna, a complete, total das makna, without any reservation whatsoever. And the reason for that is you're not getting anything in return. You're giving it as a gift. Avraham Avinu was afraid that if he took this gift and he didn't pay for it, maybe there's a chashash gezel here, because perhaps the das makna would not be a complete das makna. I mean, the only exception to this rule where a matana doesn't require a special das makna is the case of an olam chashuv. You know, if I give you a gift and I'm so excited that you receive this gift because you're an olam chashuv, then my das makna is complete. But in a normal case, the das makna is not complete. But then the Rav wants to suggest another explanation. And he wants to say that Avraham Avinu searched for a kinyan which would undermine any possibility of any nation coming forward at some point at the end of time and being ma'arer and raising doubts about the kinyan of Avraham Avinu and the Jewish people in the Stei HaMachpelah. And perhaps if he would receive the sadeh gratis, somebody would say, you don't have a complete kinyan. And therefore, in order to guarantee that the Umos HaOlam would never come and claim Haunah, and we want to take it away from the Jewish people, Avraham Avinu saw fit to pay with every last penny, Arbamiel Shekel Kesef. This, my friends, doesn't explain why Avraham refused to receive gifts from Melech Sdom. And there I think we would say that Soni Matonis Yichyeh means that a person has to realize that everything that he's gotten, everything that he receives, is coming from Hashem. In the case of Sdom, you know, this is not coming from Hashem, this is coming from Melech Sdom. Hashem says, Vavarechcha, I will bless you, and I guarantee you, Avraham Avinu, that you will be given and bestowed with many gifts and many possessions, but that's going to come through a bracha, through something that you deserve, that you earn, but not through Melech Sdom. That's not Kesef Shel Bracha that's coming from Hashem. And that would undermine Avraham Avinu's ability to be constantly, shall we say, dedicated to the idea that everything that he gets, comes from Hashem. So Rabboso, we ran out of time, but I'd love you to find the time, if you possibly can, to go through some more of the Rav's insights into Parshas Chayisara, which you'll find in the various Svarim that I mentioned at the beginning of the Shiur.